In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss awkward romance, error, teddy bear hearts, error, excuse me, sentient AI, error, in Illuminae by Amy Kaufman and Jay Kristoff.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we're going to discuss Illuminae by Amy Kaufman and Jay Kristoff.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book, then come back. If you haven't done this, you want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Major spoilers. This book is spoilery. If it is spoiled, it's spoiled.
Yep.
No negotiation.
Yep. No. And this summary is very short compared to others. But that's fine.
Yes.
But we're not talking about that yet. We have a couple of things that we have to talk about first.
Well, let's talk about the first thing. Did you find anything out about stuff and things?
I read an interview with Kristen of My Bookish Ways. And she asked, what made you decide to collaborate on a book? Will you tell us a little bit about how Illuminae came about? And I believe this is Jay Kristoff who is actually responding, unless Amy refers to herself in third person and talking to herself, which is probably not what happens. So I'm going to assume
I know somebody who talks to themselves in third person. And as soon as it's pointed out, no, it's not. But as soon as I used to work with them and they didn't realize they spoke in third person. And it's one of those things where if you don't know it, you can't hear it. And as soon as I pointed out to people that they spoke and referred to themselves in the third person, they couldn't not hear it, and it was driving people bananas. So you can imagine my entertainment one day.
Oh, yes. Okay, so maybe this is Amy Kaufman speaking about herself in third person, but it's probably Jay Kristoff.
Anyway,
the response is, we were just buddies at first. We used to get together for brunch and talk shop every month or so. One morning, Amy walked in and said she'd had a dream we wrote a book together. She couldn't remember what it was about, only that it was a book written in emails. But after throwing the idea around for a while, we decided it didn't sound crazy and gave it a shot. What's the worst that could happen? Aside from the book being terrible and us gouging each other's eyes out, that is. That's definitely Jay Kristoff.
That is 100% Jay Kristoff. Oh, that's delightful.
I like that it came from a dream.
I like the fact that they were talking over brunch.
Yeah,
I wonder what they did have for brunch.
They probably did have mimosas or Bloody Marys. Jay Kristoff had a Bloody Mary.
Yeah. I hope no avocado was harmed in the making of that brunch. I'm not a very good millennial. I do not really like avocados.
I do not like avocados either. It's the texture. It's too...
Yeah.
Like, it makes me do this.
Yeah. I had hidden avocado in a salad once in Las Vegas. I didn't realise it was avocado. And I thought the lettuce had gone off.
Oh.
And I was about to ask the waitstaff, but I checked the menu first. And then it was avocado, so... Yeah.
Ugh. Yuck. No,
I don't
mind
guacamole, but just a little bit. Tiniest amount.
Yes, just the tiniest, littlest amount. I do not prefer it.
No.
I also don't like sour cream.
I love sour cream. I'm not a biggest fan of salsa.
I like salsa. Give me all the salsa.
You have the salsa, I'll have the sour cream. We'll share the cheese. Job's a good one.
Yeah, okay.
Awesome sauce.
Good. That's good.
What would you have for brunch while you talk shop? What's on your brunch?
I don't know. Typically, if I go to a restaurant that serves brunch, then that probably means that they're also already serving their lunch menu, and so I would choose something like that. So I don't really have a brunch choice. I'm not a fan of brunch.
See, my brunch would be what I would have as my favourite is breakfast, and there's two variations. Toasted bagel, cream cheese and smoked salmon, or toasted bagel, scrambled egg and smoked salmon. The bagel and the smoked salmon is non-negotiable, but it can give a take or cream cheese or scrambled egg.
I'm not a fan of salmon or cream cheese, so you can have all of those.
Yes!
Give me something with a potato, and I will be okay.
Okay, so this is going to come back to the age-old question. Waffle House. What do they have that's appropriate?
What does Waffle House have that's appropriate?
Yes. If for you, for me, you're for sorted. You? They've got hash browns.
Yeah.
I need to know. Waffle House, if you're listening, we're still willing to do the show from a Waffle House, and we will eat the hash browns. And if you can add in some smoked salmon, so much the better, dudes.
I don't know if you could get smoked salmon at a Waffle House.
Am I showing my poshness? Am I being fancy?
You might be. You might be being fancy.
Being a fancy pants.
You are. You're being a fancy pants.
Anywho, let's dive into this.
Yes, let's. Initial thoughts?
Okay, so I'd heard about Illuminae because it's been recommended through various book groups and on the podcast before.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, other authors.
Yes.
Specifically, Jackson Ford.
Yes, that is.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Raving about it. And I like the concept of it, but I'm not sure I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was certainly an experience. And this kind of harkens back to another book we've reviewed recently and talked about recently, where I can't say if I enjoyed it or not, but I certainly think it was an experience, and I'm not unhappy that I have read it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this one is a little bit less terrible in like all of the things that happen. Not as in it is a bad book, but it is a little bit less terrible than The Wilder Girls, which is, I believe, the book you were referring to.
Yes. I didn't feel sad. Like, I didn't feel as emotionally charged as The Wilder Girls. And The Wilder Girls was very... Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a roller coaster. Yep. Whereas this wasn't.
Yeah.
And because of the sci-fi element to it, actually, it probably made it a bit more enjoyable. But yeah, it's certainly something that I'm glad I've read.
Yes. Yes, me too.
Don't get me wrong, I've personally given it 4 out of 5 stars on Goodreads.
Yes.
Personally.
Yes.
So I did enjoy it to one variation of that word.
Yeah.
I'm not explaining myself very well. What about you?
I don't know if this would have been one that I would have picked up on my own, but because Jackson Ford loved it so much and talked about
it. Scarily so.
Yeah, I thought, well, you know, I like Jackson Ford and I like his book, so I should probably read this one. And I also like other works by Jay Kristoff, so there's no reason why I wouldn't enjoy it. And I did enjoy it. I did. Yeah. And I do like an epistolary novel, as we know by my obsessions with Don Kurtigich.
Yes.
So,
there's a lot of things that lends itself to being brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it wasn't phenomenal.
I can agree with that. Yes. Yes.
Cool.
I think that's accurate. Yeah.
Cool. Shall we dive into the summary? Because this is going to take hours.
No,
hours,
it's not. Hours, no, it's not going to take hours. No, it's not. It's fine. So, here we go. A preface. Illuminae, as you might have gleaned from what I just said literally 10 seconds ago, Illuminae is an epistolary novel. It's told through emails, instant messages, medical reports, interviews, military files, and Aiden, the AI that runs the ships featured in the story. We're going to do our best to summarize, but it might be odd or short. Shorter than the Diviner's summary, at least.
Which is still doing that
which
one.
Which is still currently ongoing. But who knows? Whatever. You also need to know that it is the year 2575 and we're in space. A mysterious organization called the Illuminae Group has compiled all this information for Director Frobisher of Baytech, about an attack on the planet Carenza and the director's efforts to cover it up. Anyway, Cady Grant and Ezra Mason have just broken up. Teens in the future are just like teens today. Who would have known? Shock. Awe. Surprise. This is great and or shitty, depending on who you are following at the moment. But you know what makes it better? The very next day, Baytech Industries attacks this small, illegal mining planet, Carenza, and they, Cady and Ezra, and only about 1,000 others are able to evacuate.
So Cady escapes on the ship called Hypatia, and Ezra is on the Alexander, and there's another ship called the Copernicus. The Hypatia and the Copernicus are civilian ships, while the Alexander, who answered Carenza's distress call, is part of the United Terran Authority, the UTA. The Alexander is charged with defending against Biotech's warship, the Lincoln, which has destroyed the Alexander's wormhole generator. All three ships have sent distress calls that have gone unanswered, so they're struggling through space trying to get to Heimdall, a jump station where Cady's dad is stationed to escape, but the Lincoln is following behind, trying to get rid of all the witnesses of the attack on Carenza. Time is running short.
Time is running short.
Mm-hmm. You can hear the TikTok in the background.
You can. I'm surprised they didn't actually have that going in the audiobook, by the way, because the audiobook was fantastic.
We'll get to that. We will get to that, little missy.
Yes, we will. Okay, so the military on the Alexander conscript Ezra to become a pilot. They're conscripting anyone who has any skill, really, to help repair the damage to the ship, to become fighter pilots, to do research, you know, whatever. Cady, meanwhile, is on the Hypatia and begins to hack into the ship's computer system to try to figure out what is going on, because it really seems like they're not being told everything that's going on. Her hacking is noticed by another hacker/research officer guy named Byron Zhang, and together they start digging. Byron teaches Cady how to get around safeguards and becomes her teacher. And even though in the book she refers to him as Sensei, I do not want to refer to him as Sensei because that makes me think of Ninja Turtles, and we don't have time for that conversation again. Ezra has begun sending Cady emails, but she's been ignoring them. She broke up with you, dude. Like, give her some time, okay? But that drunk email that he sent was really funny.
That was, like, the best. Oh, my God. That was just very amazing.
Very good. And I also like later on when they refer to passing out on your keyboard as having QWERTY face. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
There was more chuckle moments than I was expecting.
Yes, definitely. So, he's been sending her emails and she hasn't been responding. But, you know, it's been 6 months. So maybe she should respond? I don't know.
Or maybe he should read the room and leave her alone.
Maybe he should read the room and leave her alone. That is also a possibility.
Anywho, Ezra is now a pilot and is flying drills when Aiden, the AI, commands the pilots to stop what they're doing and destroy the Copernicus. Aiden won't allow contact with the Copernicus and blows it up. Well, shit.
Yikes.
Oh my God. A few ships escape the explosion and head towards the Alexander, but Aiden demands that they destroy those ships too. Ezra and his major and first lieutenant do not explode those ships though, and bring the refugees on board. They are put into quarantine immediately because Aiden reveals that the crew is infected with a deadly virus.
It's another deadly virus story.
Seriously, why do we keep doing this?
I don't know.
We need to start doing some deep investigation into these books. We're going to have to do contemporary romance. I'm sorry, we need that world to be a lot happier. And what we talk about seems to reflect in the current political climate. So I'm going down the romance route from now on because this is just unacceptable. I need hearts and flowers and happily ever afters, goddammit.
Yeah, yikes. I do not need any more quarantine stories.
No. No.
And we've read all of them in the past. Yes.
I'm not that type of person who wants to read, like, satirical books. I need separation. God damn it.
No more quarantines after this, okay? Let's really try really hard not to read another quarantine story.
Well, I just so happen to know what's being read for next week. And
is there a quarantine yet? There's not a
quarantine, but there's certainly infection.
Damn it.
Oh my god.
Oh man.
Why do we do this to ourselves?
I don't know. Oh my gosh.
Oh, anywho.
Anyway, yikes.
Yeah. Aedin has destroyed the Copernicus to protect the fleet from this virus. But Aedin did that on its own, with no command.
Yikes.
It's all get shut down. Yeah.
Good.
The Major and First Lieutenant are executed for disobeying, and the Alexander's officers hide the fact that Aedin acted on its own, saying that instead, the Lincoln destroyed the Copernicus, while they scramble to figure out what's going on. They need Aedin if they're going to make the jump from Heimdall, and they'll be there to do that in about 4 weeks. They also need Aedin to protect them from the Lincoln if they attack again. And since they need Aedin to work properly, they get Byron on the Alexander to help fix it.
The Lincoln gets closer, and Ezra and a few others are sent to hold it off. Also, Katie and Byron create a program to shut down the Lincoln's engines to buy them some time, and they need Aedin online to do that. Katie reaches out to Ezra after she saw that he was court-martialed after the Copernicus explosion, and hacks a way for them to secretly instant message each other using other crew members' names. And now they're talking a lot more than when she was ignoring him.
For 7 minutes each time.
For 7 minutes each time. And they end up still loving each other?
Ah.
Oh. So since Katie and Ezra are chatting a lot now, Byron convinces Katie to use Ezra to plant a device in the Alexander's computer systems so they can hack it and find out what's going on. This is pretty devious, as she says she's helping him find his friend Jimmy, who is in quarantine. But she's actually finding out all sorts of classified information instead, like all the info about the virus on the Copernicus. It's yikes.
Yeah. All the yikes.
It's yikes. It's yikes. So, Baytech released a virus that has been nicknamed Phobos to control the population of Carenza. It was meant for them to release this virus and everyone would just, like, kind of be very sedentary and pass out, and then they'll just go in and wipe everyone out. But that's not what happened.
No. Yikes. These things always go awry. When are people going to learn?
They're not. They're not going to learn. No. Stop releasing viruses. Stop it.
Yeah.
So this virus is airborne and it attacks the brain and it makes those inflicted with it seek comfort from others, but makes them, in not so many words, crazy with paranoia and eyeball stabbing rage.
Happy times.
So
sounds good. Like Christmas.
It does. Katie's mom had been sent to the Copernicus to help study the virus, and, as you might have guessed, when the Copernicus was destroyed, her mom was too.
That sucks.
That does suck. But you know, it's a good thing that her mom did not want her to come aboard the ship. She tried to stop that at every turn. Because Katie was gonna, she wanted to go with her. And her mom's like,
she tried.
No.
She tried. Yeah.
Exploded.
I mean, it would have been nice for her to have had the conversation with her mum rather than, you know, just think her requests were being denied for no random reason, for no reason at all. But, you know.
Nah. Exploded.
It's late to have that conversation.
It is.
So, Aedin is back up and running again. It realises that it was shut down and that it will probably be shut down again and gets a little angry.
Just what you want. An angry, sentient AI. Hooray!
Related to our Twitter account.
Our Twitter...
Fictional Hangover.
At Fictional Hangover, no ER. While it is a sentient Twitter handle, it has not gone evil
yet. No, it's more sarcastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not evil yet.
Yeah. So it wants to stop anyone who wants to stop it. So it opens a few doors, releasing the infected people, rescuing from Copernicus, and, you know, leading them to the bridge to kill the captain and officers and other military officials.
That is so great.
That's a party. That's a party.
It's an eyeball stabbing party.
We've all been to those now, calling jazz.
We have been. Don't look at me. While you're drunk doing something inappropriate in the corner, not being paranoid and stabbing someone's eyes out.
Oh, that's a night ending in Y. So, it does try to save the unaffected refugees, though. So, you know, that's good. Yeah. Byron has escaped and has made his own way to Aiden's control centre and is manually shutting it down. Katie decides that she's going to come help and save Ezra, who is hiding somewhere away from the infected. So she steals a shuttle and flies over. Some from the Alexander escape to the Hypatia and are put in quarantine there. The captain notices one of the people in the quarantined hangars looks to be infected.
Mm-mm.
So she opens the airlock, killing them all in the hangar.
No. No. Bitch. And that guy was literally just suffering from PTSD. Even though they say, hey, guess what? This disease, this virus looks like PTSD, but it's not.
Yeah.
She murdered all those people.
So, just murder everyone. So the captain wants to leave the Alexander behind, but Aiden steps in and threatens a nuclear attack if they leave.
Can I just say something real quick that reminds me of our last conversation, the one that we had with Bridget Tyler, and sending people out through the airlock so they're just tumbling through space?
Oh, gosh.
It reminds me of poor Teddy tumbling through space.
Still just spinning around. Spinning.
As the final credits roll on the final episode, he just tumbles through space. It's terrible. And there's a lot of them now. There's more than just Teddy.
Well, this is the Christmas special. It's a 5-minute thing in all the days. Instead of like the fireplace on repeat.
Mm-hmm. It's just bodies.
It's just spinning.
Bodies in space.
On repeat, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And you can choose, you know, you can choose, yeah, do you want your log cabin? Do you want, like, an electric fire? No, this one is, do you want, like, Teddy?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want all of the airlocked refugees?
Yes. Yes, that's what I want. I want all of them. It starts out with just one or two. And then they just keep tumbling by. That's all I want. This is terrible. So Katie is on the Alexander now, using a portable data pod to talk to Ezra, who leads her to him. She has to fight some infected along the way, and he teaches her how to use a gun to stop them. Isn't that sweet? Oh. He leads her to the control room, but he's not there.
What?
It was Aiden pretending to be Ezra all this time.
What?
Yikes.
What?
They had some very, like, romantic conversations. The two of them. Sexy conversations.
Oh, I bet there was an aubergine emoji and everything.
There probably was at least one. Yikes. So Aiden led Katie to the control room to be confronted by Byron, who was destroying Aiden, but now attacks Katie because, guess what? He's infected.
Rage party, yay!
He's coming for her eyeballs with an axe.
That's a little, like, you know, over the top using an axe.
It is a little bit. It is. Just a little bit. But, you know, he snaps out of his paranoia for just a moment to realize that he's about to kill Katie. And then he kills himself instead with electricity.
Bloody hell, man.
At least he didn't kill Katie.
Yeah, yeah, there is that.
We can't have both main horrific characters dead. Yeah, that's true. But we can't have all the main characters dead. The book's not over yet. They didn't die in the prologue, though, so that's at least a little bit better.
If you haven't killed him in the first 20 pages, what's the point?
There's no point. Aiden talks to Katie and admits that he was pretending to be Ezra to lead her there because she's the only one who can fix everything. Aiden also tells her that Ezra died a few days ago when that small group went out to stop the Lincoln. Ooh. It was a little fishy, that scene with him coming back being the hero.
Yeah.
It was a little... It wasn't right.
It was off-brand.
It was. It was. He's dead. In quotes.
R.I.P. Ezra. In quotes.
He's dead.
Anywho, Katie decides to hack away at the control panel with, you know, an axe. But Aiden tells her that there are 1,000 infected people still on Alexander and that the Lincoln is after them again and will arrive soon to attack. Good times. She's got to save all those people, so she convinces Aiden to let the uninfected people go to the Hypatia, and she'll get Aiden back online before the Lincoln can get to them. The infected are still around and attacking too, but Katie and Aiden manage to get most of the uninfected to the Hypatia so it can escape. She repairs Aiden just in time to fight the Lincoln.
Very good. We were running low on time at this
part. She's very
part.
Practical as well.
Yes. So, she kind of repairs Aiden. He's not all the way fixed. And she has to manually shoot at the missiles that are heading for them. Yikes. Aiden guides her in doing this, much the same way he guided her in using a gun when he was pretending to be Ezra. And then he helps her to an escape pod after they destroy the Lincoln. The Alexander has been critically damaged, though, and Katie is suffering from radiation poisoning and is probably going to die soon.
Good times.
Aiden tells her that even if she does die, she'll have a part of Aiden in her data pod that will be able to explain what really happened. And then the Alexander explodes. Wah, wah. Katie's escape pod is rescued by the Hypatia, and she survives! Yay! Also, Ezra was on one of those shuttles that escaped from the Alexander and put into the quarantine, and not the one that was ejected through the airlock!
Yay!
Aiden has begun to rebuild itself.
Yay?
Yay? Question mark? We're saying nay. Yay now. Though, now, with Aiden, right? Because he's not so terrible, right?
He I think did it's still a debate.
For a reason?
Let's put a pin in this discussion.
He did everything for the greater good. The greater good.
Error.
Feelings. Human emotion. Emote.
Error. Aubergine error.
Can I say it in English, though? In American English, I mean? Because it's not eggplant. An aubergine, it's an eggplant. And yeah. I think eggplant error is also good.
I like eggplant error, but I like aubergine error as well.
Yeah.
I had to Google what an eggplant was once.
I've had to Google what aubergine was. I just thought it was a color. I thought it was the color of an eggplant. I didn't know that you actually called an eggplant an aubergine.
Why do you call that an eggplant?
I don't know. I don't eat them. I don't like them.
They're tasteless.
They got a weird texture.
Very true. When you cut them, it's kind of like it.
Yeah, not for me. Not for me.
Anywho.
yeah, we're not done. We're almost done, though. This is a very short summary.
At the end, we learn that Katie is the Illuminae group. All the data she compiled, all this that we've been reading the whole time, everything that was mentioned in the beginning will be used to expose Bitech and all the terrible things they've done. It also turns out that the director, Frobisher, who is in charge of Bitech, is Ezra's mother. He mentioned her in like the middle of the story and said that she was terrible, but yeah, she definitely is.
She's really very terrible.
Whoa. Director Frobisher wants to find out where her son is, but Katie slash the Illuminae group won't tell, of course. After menacing, you have no idea who you're dealing with, Katie sends the files to the UTA. And a few days later, there's footage of Ezra and Katie and their K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
Oh. Ah. Ah. So there was so much more to the book than this, but it was all awkward conversations between Katie and Ezra, and Ezra
talking to... It would be simpler just to read the book.
It would be, and you should listen to it because it's fantastic, but there's just so much going on, and not all of it is really, like, relevant to tell what happens in the story.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, this is, like, bare bones. This is actually what happened while that's all this other shit was happening.
Yes. Yes. And this is the salient things. I personally found it confusing at first.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
Till probably about a third of the way in.
Mm-hmm.
And I will admit to, if this was me just reading it for my own personal entertainment, I don't know if I would have continued. I'm not necessarily one of these people that quits a book, though. I might come back to it. But the chances are I'm more likely to finish it. But I probably wouldn't have put as much effort into finishing it if it was just for me. Because it was for the podcast.
Yeah.
It was like a necessity.
But
I did enjoy it. It just took a while for me to get into it. And I think it's because the pieces need to, like, fit together a little bit more.
Yeah, there were quite a few big chunks that were like, this is important, but then here's all of this other stuff that's happening. And oh yeah, let's go back just a little bit and here's this other bit of important information. Like, if those two important bits of information had been closer together,
yes,
it would have helped take the story along for me a little bit. I did really enjoy it though, and I do love these types of novels where it's just found information and oh, here's a video clip of something that's happening at the same time, and oh yeah, it's also terrible. Like, I like it. I do. I really do. But it was a lot.
Yeah, this isn't the type of book that I could regularly pick up. Like, it's like a special treat to pick up this kind of very aesthetic, almost kinesthetic book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, until it started really, like, piecing together and until I really got into it, I was wondering if maybe the audiobook was not the medium for it, and maybe I should be reading the book. But I don't know, I really loved the audiobook. It was so well done. And it was an ensemble piece. And there were obviously the main characters. So there were some central audiobook narrators. But it was just so well done. I did not want to not listen to it.
I think this one would have been a really good one to have the actual book, not the ebook, because I have the ebook and I flipped through the ebook and I sent you a screenshot from the ebook that was delightful. But I think it would have been really nice to have the actual physical book, listening to it whilst flipping the pages and looking at everything. I think that would have made it a truly, like, fantastic experience.
It certainly would have made it more multidimensional as well, and I think I probably would have appreciated it a little bit more. I had a look through the ebook myself as well. And I 100% agree with you. I think it needs to be the physical book with the audiobook. Especially because some of the pages are not easy to follow. Sometimes you know when you read a comic book, and usually the panels follow a nice set pattern. You know, it's easy to follow, but sometimes it's not quite so easy. That you've got to jump around the page a little bit to get that conversation, to understand the flow of it.
Yeah.
And I think some of the pages within the book were like that, and having it as an audiobook smoothed that out and would have made it a little bit more accessible. So yeah, I definitely think it's a multimedia, multi-dimensional thing. I think it listened so well as a piece of entertainment as well. I would love to see it on the TV.
Ooh, yeah, me too. Me too. I would love to see this as definitely TV, not a movie.
No, I think too much would have to be cut out from it to be a movie.
It would be like our summary.
Yeah. And that would not do it justice.
No. No.
No, there's too so many bits and pieces that need to be included.
Yeah, there's so much good stuff. But, like, Ezra talking to Jimmy a lot didn't really tell the story. You got to see Ezra. You got to see him being sarcastic with his friend Jimmy, who was nerdy and awkward and just...
He was all of us, come on.
Yeah. But you got to see that, and that was interesting, but it wasn't crucial to the plot line.
It didn't progress the story, but it was certainly character building.
Yes.
And it helped build Ezra's character to the point where you feel something towards him, mm-hmm. ownership of him, mm-hmm. and then when it turns out that Aiden is Ezra,
yes, at
least part of the way through, I don't know about you, I sat there and went, what?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, that, ooh.
I think that was probably one of my favourite moments, was that twist.
Yeah, that was a good twist. Aiden
forcing Ezra, and then you kind of like, hang on, do I need to go back and re-listen to this to try and pick up on when Ezra stopped and Aiden began?
Yeah.
Because you can think, I think in like in a visual sense, like if it was like a video call, like what we're doing now, mm-hmm. you can almost imagine like some kind of like break in the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Something would be slightly off in the background, or something would be slightly, you know, different about the facial expressions or mannerisms. Yeah. And that's the point where the truly observant would go, hang on, that person's not the same person as before.
Yeah, and I almost wonder if in the texts that they're sending to each other, like, I feel like Ezra, you know, and they in the audiobook, they left in any spelling mistakes, or if they like had a typo, they left it in. It's hard to pick up on because, you know, you're just so like engrossed in the story and you think like, did they just say an F instead of a T or whatever. But anyway, they left those sorts of typos and things in. But I wonder if there was any difference in Ezra typing as Ezra or as Aiden typing as Ezra. Like, were there fewer grammatical errors or something like that that we just didn't get to see because we didn't read it?
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be very interesting.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get this book and listen to it again and look through all the pages.
Yeah, when the libraries open up, I think it's certainly a trip.
Yeah. Yep.
It's definitely a worthwhile trip. Yeah. If anybody has a physical copy and listened to the audiobook.
Yeah, if you can answer these questions for us.
That would be mint.
Would be. It definitely would be. Jackson Ford, I'm looking at you.
It's all right, fictional hangover. We'll tweet him later on. Demanding answers.
Yeah, we might need to. Might need to do that. So you liked the Ezra Aiden twist.
I did.
I really liked all the murder.
Yeah.
And eyeballs. So good. It was so good. I loved the report of the man killing his family. I mean, it was terrible. It was gruesome and it was terrible and everything about it was awful.
Thanks for that clarification.
Yeah. Like, you just find out that he's killed his entire family, and the last one was like a young girl, like a tiny child. But then you go and try to rescue the tiny child, and the tiny child also has Phobos and also wants to kill you, because yikes.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
The heart like a teddy bear.
Yeah, that was rough. But I also liked the, I don't know the names because there were so many different people in this book, but there were the scientists who were studying Phobos, and there was the one who was like sleeping with the captain, and then the other guy, and the other guy clearly was infected. Yes, and you could see his paranoia, or I guess you couldn't see it because we listened to it, but you could hear his paranoia really kicking in when he's writing these reports, and then...
Dude was like, yikes. Yeah.
That was good.
They were really intense. It was such a mix of genres. It was like a sci-fi. It was a survivalist. Mm-hmm. It was a horror. It was... It had an alien-esque feel to it. It was, yeah.
It was lots of things.
Yeah, yeah. It was a complete hybrid. And that's one of the things I like most about it, was the hybrid. The little girl with the teddy bear was probably my least favourite moment, because I was, like, listening to it at, like, 2 o'clock in the morning.
And then you had nightmares.
In bed. Playing Animal Crossing, because ofs. And then I was like, what? Like, literally, like, about to turn off and go to bed. And I was like, yeah, I'm playing for another half an hour at least now.
Well, you know, we were warned. We were warned by Bridget Tyler last week. But we were also warned in the book. There was, like, a little... I looked at this page in the ebook, and there was, like, a little sticky note in the corner with, like... It was when one of the times when there was the Illuminae groups, like, asides that they've added in, and it's like, you need to read this part with the lights on.
Yes.
And
I then looked
everyone
up.
Was murdered.
I looked up, because I just had the bedside lamp on, and I looked up, and I thought, I can't return the main light on. Shall I listen to this tomorrow? It's fine. I'm playing Animal Crossing. It's cute. What's the worst that could happen? Well, I'm busy fishing in Cutesville.
Murders. Eyeball gouging.
So many.
Rage. Paranoia
vicious
murders.
Vicious rage murders.
Yep. So good, though. So good. I loved it.
I kind of got the image of, like, the creepy girl from The Ring or something like that, just standing there with her teddy bear heart and...
Yeah. I can't believe that is your least favorite. That's my favorite.
No, I'm not saying the least favorite is in it's detestable and I hated it. It was probably the bit that made me go the most. Yeah. My least favorite aspect to the book was it took me so long to get into it.
Do you know what I didn't like?
KISSING.
You know me so well, my friend. I did not love the romance.
It was awkward romance.
Didn't like it. Didn't care for the romance. Don't need it.
I would have preferred if they were just really good mates. You know, they grew up together and they had a kinship together and it wasn't like a romantic relationship that they had. I would prefer that if it was a friendship.
Yeah, or it could have even been that, yeah, they were together and they broke up and now they're the only two people, like, that know each other of the handful of survivors, and so they have to come together because of their kinship. That would have been better for me. I don't need you to have a romance. And then to make it even more awkward to have a romance with the AI. That was
weird. That was just, You can see in the background, I have a lot of romance books. Yeah. I love a good romance book. And if it's a Regency romance, you know I'm all over it.
Yes, of course.
But yeah, I agree with you. I didn't need it in this book.
Mm-mm.
It annoys me. It's a pet peeve, and I'm sure it is one of yours as well. You have a boy. You have a girl. Can they not just be friends? Why did they have to have a romance?
Had to have a romance. Had to have a romance.
I would have preferred it if Ezra was having a romance with his friend James.
Yeah, I would also have preferred that. Or I would have preferred it if Ezra actually did die. And it was Aiden pretending to be Ezra for the whole rest of the time.
Aiden downloaded into its cyborg body.
I hope that he... I hope that in the next, or in the rest of the series, let's just write our fan fiction here for a second.
Okay.
I would like for Aiden to have a body and to be an actual person walking around.
I'm a real boy.
Mm-hmm. He's gonna be like Iko from Cinder from the Lunar Chronicles.
I hope it's more Iko from Cinder than Ultron from the MCU.
Oh,
movies.
Yeah. You know, I got some Ultron vibes from this too, though, because they mentioned, there was one part mentioning, like, being a puppet and cutting the strings, and I was like, oh, it's the age of Ultron, it's happening.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yep.
Of course, it's what we both thought.
Yes, of course it is. I know. We are. We are one.
Yeah. It was... I know the teenagers, I know it's awkward, I know it's through their, like, private text messages, but it just... I think that was part of why I wasn't really enjoying it quite so much. Those parts I just didn't gel with.
Yeah, I don't care about their romance. I don't need that part of the story. Although it did make, like, it a very nice knife twist in the back when it was Aiden as Ezra. That was pretty great.
Yeah, but But again, you don't need it to have been a romantic relationship for that to have been a kicker.
Yeah, that's true.
If they were childhood friends, you know, they've spent 17 years in the sandbox together.
Why are they 17 playing in the sandbox?
Because
it's ironically funny at that point?
It is ironically, but they've spent 17 years in that sandbox. The parents are really neglecting them.
They have been neglected, yeah. But it's a good thing that it's a sandbox, so you can still go pee and poo in there and then scrape it over like a litter box for a cat.
Exactly, and they've made the most fantastic sandcastle to live in.
They have, of course they have.
And it attracts crabs, so they've got something to eat.
Yeah.
They've got a bucket and spade for water needs.
Mm-hmm.
They've become very self-sufficient in that sandbox.
They really are. It's kind of a big sandbox, though.
It's huge now, especially, you know, as they've grown up.
Yes.
They're used to sand in all the wrong places.
Yes, they're used to it. They have sand in their butt cracks all the time, and they like it.
They're highly, highly exfoliated. The skin is beautiful.
Yes, they have very smooth skin. They have very nice elbows.
Oh, they're yes. Not dry, no rough ankles.
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. That is our fan fiction.
You're welcome to that.
Yes.
Dark recesses of the internet.
Yes. Yikes. Yikes.
How often do we go into very unexpected places?
More often than not.
The power of editing.
Oh, but it's staying in this time, friend.
Excellent.
It's staying in this time. Oh, man.
Oh, dear
me. Do we need to talk about surprises? I mean, I feel like we've kind of already talked about, we were, you know, had some feelings about Ezra and Aiden, and...
I don't think we need to address it as an individual thing. You know, I think we've kind of covered it.
Yeah.
It's a difficult book to discuss. It's a very difficult book to talk
about. It is. Because it's not a linear story progression. There's so much other stuff going on. So really, really, you should just go read it. Because there's so much more that we left out in our discussion. And we did tell you the most fantastic and terrible and gruesome parts of it. But there's so much more that happens. So you should go enjoy it too. But get the audiobook. And like an actual physical copy of the book, and read them together at the same time.
Yeah.
Needs to be done. Needs to be done, and I'm gonna do it. As soon as libraries open again, I'm gonna put Illuminae on hold, and I'm gonna have a copy of it in my hand, and I'm gonna read the book at the same time. I'm gonna listen to it.
Excellent.
Yep. I wanna have that experience. Anyway, is it time?
It's time.
This time is special because we have a listener who has joined us, and as much as we've been talking about Jackson Ford, it's not actually Jackson Ford that joined us for this for this would you rather. Although he probably would have if we asked him to.
Probably.
Anyway, no, this is a listener of the show. Her name is Nina. And she is also intensely British.
I am
outnumbered.
Woo!
Light a lamp in the window, the British are coming.
No, that was a bad idea. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. I love my two British friends so much.
And she said that because she's looking at us.
She's obliged.
I am obliged. But it's true. So, Nina, you have listened to the show before, so you know all about Would You Rather. And you know that our first question is one that we always ask on social media because you almost always answer it. But then we have four more to ask you. So, Claire, do you want to ask our first question?
Yes. On social media, we asked you, would you rather read the texts between two teenagers experiencing a terrible incident in first hand or the government files about it after the fact? On Facebook, 65% said texts and 35% said files. On Instagram, it was 63% said texts and 37% said files. And then on Twitter, it was 80% texts and 20% the government files. Nina on Facebook said,
I would absolutely rather decipher texts between teenagers because I'm so used to listening to them. I've had my own teenagers and they're grown ups now, and then I worked with teenagers for so many years. So I talk teen. I don't know that I could do with the legalese of an official document.
Yeah.
So teenagers, even though it might be cringy in some portions, you know it will be cringy in some portions. Very cringy. But no, I would much rather deal with the honesty and openness of a teenager any day over an official government document.
Yeah, I can only imagine the government document's got a lot of interesting stuff that's redacted. So unless you've got full 100% access, and you're probably going to get a lot more honesty from the teenagers' texts. But my worry is, if it's in text speak, I cannot. Like, back in the days of the Nokia, when you only had, like, 100 characters, and you had to lol and ruffle and IRL, and I don't know text speak. Like, I have literally always punctuated my texts, even when I was paying for each one. And my friends, if they ever sent me a text in text speak, I would reply back saying, don't know what you're talking about. You're going to have to spend the credits and tell me or give us a call, because I just do not understand text speak. So hopefully it's in, like, you know, proper full English.
Proper grammar and punctuation. Yeah.
I don't mind the odd emoji. That's fine.
Yeah, but I prefer proper grammar. And lots of commas. I need commas in my life.
I think the comma is grossly underappreciated because you can intone so much with a good pause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. Do you know what I hate, though? I hate apostrophes because they're always misused. Like, I go into irrational rages with misused apostrophes.
I'm terrible at misusing apostrophes because I just throw them in everywhere. I just type away and apostrophes go fly. It used to be commas. I used to be, and then I got pretty much like academically beaten out of me to stop using so many commas. And now an apostrophe just gets flung around. I'm like, oh, just typing and flinging and.
Nope. And then my eye twitches.
In the most literal of senses.
Yes. I need to answer this question. I would also want to read texts. Let's just get that out there. Texts are more important. You can actually see what it was like to live through the terrible event, whatever it happens to be, can experience it. So yeah, that's what I want to do.
That was what the majority of people said in the comments as well. Like Steph on Facebook said, I think it would be better to see texts because sometimes the government leaves stuff out. Constance said, with the text, you could see pictures and videos of what's happening, which would help to see things as they happened, where the government files were most likely biased and vague. Colin on Facebook said, teenagers texts because, oh my gosh, how else would you find out, like, what, Becky and, like, Michael and, you know, kissed and everything, like, for sure. And Candy on Facebook said, controversially, government files, teenage texts would probably lack anything relevant, which was also our Instagram responses. So Real Jackson Ford said government files, and a couple of other people said on Instagram government files.
I don't
There's
know.
No explanation.
If you've listened to teenagers talk at all in depth, they're very much drama queens, and nothing is left out. Like, there is no guesswork left at all with a teen drama, because they let you know everything. Whether you want to or not, you're going to hear about it. So, yes. Again, for realistic data collection, I'm going with teenagers.
You just have to sift through it, don't you?
Yes.
Like, get from, you know, the Becky kissing Michael and like, what's that gonna do with anything? And then, no, I don't need to know about what you had for dinner last night. Oh, that's an interesting piece of information about who shot who.
That is actually important, but you know, years and years and years from now, it might be important to learn what they had for dinner that night. Someone might like that information.
Unlikely. Come on.
The night before the tragic event, such and such had a McDonald's. They doubled up and got 12 chicken dippers because, you know, why not?
And then in 500 years from now, when there is no McDonald's and or when McDonald's runs the universe, it will be important information to know.
Unless there was a food poisoning zombie virus incident that combined transfer of the virus through the food that they ate for dinner. I'm not sure it'll be pertinent.
Do we know how this virus in this book started? It could have been from the chicken nuggets.
So somebody had a cheeky Nando's and suddenly they're a zombie.
I've never had a cheeky Nando's and I feel so deprived.
What? I don't think we call it cheeky Nando's anymore. I think that's like sort of 2018. But yeah, if you see a cheeky Nando's in Britain, everybody knows what you're talking about.
Fine.
Britain, Amanda.
I never had Nando's.
Really?
No.
Nando's is a chicken. To explain to Amanda, Nando's is a chicken restaurant. So they specialise in chicken. So they do like chicken legs, chicken wings. And you make up the meal so you can have spicy rice or salad or peas or squash. And you just kind of like pick it all together. And for some reason, everybody started calling it cheeky Nando's. So you're like, oh, should we go Nando's? Oh, let's have a cheeky Nando's tonight on the way home. Nobody knows why, but it's just this massive chicken chain restaurant. But it's quite nice.
Thank you for sharing that with me, because I didn't understand. I was just going to laugh and nod and pretend. So thanks.
It's just a chicken restaurant, really. That was really nice. The spicy rice is particularly... Oh, they do nice corn on the cob.
Good. That's really good. Okay, let's go on to our next question.
What's our next question?
Our next question is, would you rather be on the Hypatia or the Alexander?
Under normal circumstances, I'd rather be on the Alexander because it's a dreadnought. You've got warheads and nukes and all that kind of stuff. In the book, I'd rather be on the Hypatia because I would not want to mess with the Phobo virus any more than I want to mess with COVID-19. I'm staying home. I'm wearing a mask. I'm dousing myself in hand sanitizer and rubbing alcohol. I'm not messing with this. So, yeah, getting far away from the Phobo virus because, I mean, look at me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could make awkward friends with Aiden and he could keep you safe.
Obliterate you and choke off your oxygen or space you. You just don't know anything.
No, you don't. He could lead all of the Phobos victims directly to your door.
Exactly. He sees everything, he can control most of it. And he's not trustworthy unless you're Cady Grant. You're a potential victim coming up.
Claire, what are you going to do? Are you going to be on the same?
I'm exactly the same as Nina. I'm staying in lockdown. I'm not going anywhere near the crazy AI. I don't know. No, I'm with Nina. Yeah.
So we're all going to be on the Alexander then?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's over. It was just absolutely terrifying when you read about the girl dragging something along and it was a human body part.
The little girl with the heart.
Yeah. It's like, I thought it was a teddy bear, but no, it was a heart.
You just reminded my least favourite thing in the book. Thank you. There it is.
Rindy slowly looks around and goes, don't you look at me.
That first chapter, when you started seeing everyone, like the people who were reacting to Phobos, the reports about the man who killed his family. And then it just like goes off into don't look at me, don't look at me, don't look at me. I'm like, oh my God, this is the best. That's when I texted you, Claire, and said, you have to get through it a little bit. And then you get to this chapter and you're like, ah,
it did take me a while to get into it. Like, if I'm honest, and I've already said this, I would not have finished this book if I didn't have to finish it for the podcast.
When I would take this book on a high school book talk, it was really hard for me to convince them to get through it because it was like, 600 pages or so? It's a huge book. I mean, it's a slog to get through when a lot of teenagers are used to 250, 300 page books. And this is double that at least. But it really... like a movie script, and I know that they've bought the movie right. Go Brack. I know that they are looking at making it into a movie or a series, which would be fantastic because it does lend itself to that.
That's it. It came across more of a script to me than it did a book, like a piece of like literature. And I think that's what I struck. I mean, the size of the book doesn't bother me at all. You know, it really doesn't bother me if it's 100 pages, 600,000 pages, whatever. I'm not bothered by that. It took a little while for the pieces to sort of fit together and for the story to actually get to a place where I was comfortable with it and going, I am getting this, I am enjoying it, I'm the pieces are starting to come together a little bit more, I'm starting to understand it, and then I started getting into it, but it did take a little bit longer than I would necessarily have committed to, considering my TBR file's quite big and it was something else I was desperate to read.
Yeah.
And I would have read that over this. But yeah, I mean, if it was a TV show, I would prefer this as a TV show rather than a movie, because I think at least as a TV show, they had the time. If it was a movie, there'd be too much cut out. And yeah, like bits like that creepy girl with dragging the heart.
So good.
Like?
It was so good.
It's so good. That was creepy. But it seemed to change genres all the way through. And again, that's something that we've talked about in like the main body of this episode, is it did seem to change genres from one thing to another. And I think that might have been part of the disjointed issue I had.
Yeah, after watching Alien, the sci-fi, the ship, the danger. Yeah.
I think it would make a really good like miniseries. I'm for it. I'll watch it.
I like a nice 10-episode series.
But the thing, I would just hope that they stick to it, because it's already kind of written in script format, that they would stick to the book, and they could stick to it word for word from the book and have it look on screen and not change it. I watched one episode of The 100 and was so mad after one episode compared to the book. It's like,
I think the like TV and movie production companies now are starting to realise a lot more that if they are going to adapt a book, they have to be a lot more faithful to it. They can't just, you know, essentially just take the title from here and put it over here and expect the fans of the book to appreciate and accept that. And there seems to be a lot more authors who are getting involved in the creation of the TV show or the movie rather than, you know, completely selling the rights. They are starting to get a bit more involved in the creativity of it. They might not be necessarily in castings and things like that, but they might be able to say, no, actually, that's a key part. You need to keep that in a little bit more. And I wonder how much that's got to do with George R. R. Martin, actually, with Game of Thrones.
Well, George R. R. Martin is an author that's well-renowned, and a lot of the authors that they buy the book rights for are not big names, so they don't have any say. So yeah. I think a lot of times they sign over the rights to the book and they just pass over the entire baby and just say, okay, do what you want with it. And I talked to one author, Barry Leiber, who wrote I Hunt Killers, which is a great series. And he said they sold the rights to a TV station or whoever. And that was it. He was done. I'm like, don't you want to have a say in casting or anything like that? And he's like, no. I did my part. I wrote the book.
Wow. That I also think though the literary agents have got a lot to do with that as well. Like, how much? What advice are they giving the authors? What are they fighting in terms of like retaining certain rights and certain, you know, duties of care in the original text? So are they just saying signed on the dotted line? Here's $5,000, and you might get a movie. You might not. That was, you know, it does seem to be that things are changing. Because I know Jonathan Green signed over the rights to, was it Looking for Alaska? Years ago when it was first done, and he completely lost it, and he was fighting the battle to try and get it back to give it to another studio that was actually going to do it properly and actually make it. And that's because of the poor advice that he was initially given.
PC Cast went through that same thing.
Yeah.
They sold Marked to some studio or something, and then now they've finally gotten it back, and now there's actually going to maybe be a TV show, assuming that things actually work out.
That would be great. I would love that.
Just keeping a tight rein on it, like claws in. To quote her, quoting me, she's a mama bear.
Yes.
Well, I think if you go through the trouble of writing the book and creating characters, those are your babies.
Anywho. Next question.
Okay. Yes, let's move on.
Next question. Would you rather fight the Lincoln or Aiden?
I really thought hard about this because Lincoln, again, it's a dreadnought. It's heavily armed. It's got nukes and it has ship killers. I don't think I would want to mess with anything called a ship killer, but having said that, I would rather fight the Lincoln over Aiden, because even Aiden running on a couple of gigabytes was still more skillful and tactical and able to destroy his enemies and help his friends as much as a computer has friends, in his diminished capacity. So I would have to, even though he's terrifying, I would have to go with Aiden.
Yeah, I just want to be friends with Aiden, and I want Aiden to take care of me while I'm floating through space.
I want to be friends with Aiden, but only because you keep your enemies close. He could quickly become an enemy. You keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
And he's a total frenemy. Oh my god, he's a total frenemy. I would, you know, it's like you just wouldn't not trust. You can't trust him. You can't. It's like the guy you always invite to the parties, just in case.
Yeah.
But he stands there by himself and is awkward socially. You think, dude's going to be a serial killer one day.
You just invite him so he doesn't murder you.
Yes! He's a friend you're friends with because you do not want to be murdered, because the dude is going to be a serial killer one day.
Yeah, he's the kid in the school lunchroom that you befriend because you're terrified of him secretly and you don't want to be the victim on the day that they go off.
Exactly. And they're kind of like, well, why are you friends with him? And you have to think, oh, he's got a great personality.
Really intelligent and interesting.
He would have a manifesto. You know for a fact he would be the dude with a manifesto that he carries around with him and can quote verbatim.
Oh, he's probably got a
killer. Probably.
He'll have a weird collection of things as well. And I'm not going down, you know, the killing small animals type psychopath, but you'll have some kind of weird collection that makes you go, huh. I'm not coming to your house for a sleepover.
This would be cyber attacks. He would have hacked the school system, changed them grey, posted some private pictures of people on the school main photo board. He would have done that kind of thing as his venture into computer hacking.
It's like if he was like, you'd go into his bedroom and one wall would just be all like computers and servers and fans to keep everything cool. And then you turn round and then there's a murder board or like just lots of newspaper clippings. And this is when you go, I'm not coming here again. No.
No, then you back out slowly.
We're meeting in very public places with lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting in the car by myself with you.
Yeah.
Aiden, not to be trusted.
He's not. But I wouldn't fight him because he's too conscious. He's an artificial intelligence, but he's gained sentience. So
yes. I'm fine with Lincoln.
He's for sure.
He's getting his feelings. Error. He's having feelings and emotions.
Error.
And then what is this? He's emoting.
At least with the Aiden, like fighting the Lincoln. You know, they're going to follow a pattern. You know that it's going to get to a certain situation, certain guns are going to come out because that's what they've been trained to do. And even though they are, the Lincoln is being manned by people, or even the artificial intelligence that ship will have, it's programmed. You'll be able to second guess its manoeuvres, whereas Aiden is an unpredictable psychopath.
Well, the Lincoln is like the muscular kid in school, if we're going to liken them to school characters.
He's a jock.
He's a jock. He's the muscle guy. And he's only got so many moves that he can make. If you are able to outsmart him by knocking his ankles out from under him, he's devastated. Like, he's got no more useful moves at that point.
Yeah.
So you have to rely on intelligence rather than brute force. And I think the Lincoln rely purely on brute force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Next question. Would you rather find out that your awkward, sexy conversation was with Aiden or share your awkward, sexy conversation with your boyfriend's mother?
I would rather learn that I had been sexy talking with Aiden, unless I was in an evil mood and wanting to hurt and punish my boyfriend's or husband's mother, which might be the case sometimes.
Revenge!
If I'm feeling like an Aiden, it might depend. Because sometimes I would really just want to inflict cringe on my mother-in-law.
I freaking love that phrase. I want to inflict cringe. I need that on a sticker. That's amazing.
My dad described my mother-in-law as having the face of a bulldog licking the piss off a nettle. Amazing description of a face that I think anyone can imagine, and it's so true. So I guess that, honestly, that question, it would depend on my mood. If I'd had a day with her and she was getting on my last nerve, I would probably discuss it with her just to upset her. Normally I would rather say Aiden.
You see, thinking about it, having an awkward sexy conversation with somebody who you don't realise it is, it turns out to be, you know, an artificial intelligence of a supercomputer massive spaceship is one thing. But going, hi mother-in-law, I've had sexy conversations with this artificial intelligence and it's not your son. It feels more shameful for me because it's admitting that I'm having sexy conversations but with somebody else. And it's kind of like, yeah, awkward. I don't feel like it would be revenge. I think, in fact, it would probably be more humiliation on my part that I'm having these sexy conversations and they're like, ooh, nice, hot, hot, hot. And like, it's not your son. Even though I'm dating your son. Surprise. I feel like it's more shameful for me. So
it was sometimes her son.
Sometimes.
Until he died.
Quote, quote.
And started sending really accurately drawn silhouettes with text, whatever those weird symbols were, whatever you call that. Then it got a little weird.
With the emojis. Space emojis.
Yes. Yes, that was weird.
But it's your mother-in-law, like, or your boyfriend's mother. It's just, I don't know, there's an awkwardness that's not particular. And I know in this instance it's different. Like, his mother is a bitch. But still, I don't know, it's more like humiliating for me. At least if I find out that I've had sexy conversations with Aiden, it's between me and Aiden, and it's kind of like, ugh. But you know what, actually, it's quite nice. It's quite nice.
I think there are other people that I wouldn't want to read them, like my co-workers. My mother-in-law or my boyfriend's mother, I wouldn't care. Because they might not even be around forever, so. Well, I mean, nobody's around forever, but.
I'm going to share the sexy conversation because you're the evil bad guy and you will get your comeuppance by the end of book 3. Still a bit weird.
Or, you know, you just break up with them and then they have to live with that awkwardness for the rest of their lives.
Knowing that the mother knows what they got up.
Yeah, but that's it. She knows about it and she's judging you. I'm stuck with it. That I would rather have the sexy awkward conversations with Aiden and find out about that than share them, because it does. It's the reflection, I think.
I can't imagine the situation where you would actually be sharing something personal, sexy time like with your boyfriend's mother. I can't imagine a situation that would realistically ever happen.
Well, yeah, but you never know what kind of secret things have been embedded into it, and that they're a leader of the commander of a fleet, and that you've got blackmail information on them, so you need to reveal the sex. Who can say what happens in this kind of situation? It's very unique, granted.
True.
My mother-in-law's an ex-primary school teacher. I don't think I'll be sharing sexy conversations that I've had. Ew.
Yeah,
she freaks me out anyways with things, so it probably wouldn't be awkward for her, actually.
It's like those people that you talk to and you make friends with, and then you find out that they're oversharing.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. My bad.
But when you go...
I'm the oversharer.
Oh, God.
Last question. It's nice to have these ridiculous questions on occasion.
Yes. And, you know, we were just speaking of awkward sexy conversations. And this was part of the awkward sextiness.
Speaking of awkward sextiness.
Yes.
Would you rather be called Sweetie Puff, Sugar Pants, or Cuddle Pie?
You ask Wiggle that in a really disgusting manner.
Here we go. Hello, Sweetie Puff.
None of the above.
You don't want to be my cuddle pie.
No, because I'm picturing crumbly pastry and a gooey egg.
What if it's got a soggy bottom?
Exactly. Mary Berry would not approve.
Exactly. You don't want to disappoint the berry.
No, we can't. Although a smouldering full Hollywood would not go amiss. But I wouldn't want to upset Mary Berry with a soggy pie crust. No cuddle pie. No, I guess sweetie pie. My husband got into the habit of calling me doll face.
Hiya, doll face.
Yeah, and
come here, doll face.
Yeah.
And then it goes all the way 50s housewife as well.
Anyway, in my mind, I'm picturing ancient porcelain cracked face with mold and the eye of baby keeps flapping around every time you tilt the doll's head.
So, I'm glad you're a creepy haunted doll face.
Exactly, I'm the haunted broken Victorian porcelain. And he thinks it's cute and endearing, and I'm secretly very offended by it, so.
Oh, no.
But he's making an effort, and he's an engineer, and they don't do the gushy stuff. I didn't want to discourage him, so I take doll face, but I suppose Sweetie Pie.
Sweetie Puff.
Oh, Sweetie Puff.
Sweetie Puff.
Miss Sweetie Puff.
What was the other option? Cuddle Pie?
Sugar Pants and Cuddle Pie.
Sugar Pants? Oh, no, I just have Mel Gibson flashbacks. So, no. No.
All cringeworthy, all wrong.
They're all terrible.
They are. Who thought of these?
Will Amy Kaufman or Jay Kristoff please admit to their guilt?
It feels like a Jay Kristoff sort of thing to make it as awkward as humanly possible with a dash of sarcasm.
Yeah, I mean, the doll face could be very sarcastic too, and I would be happier with the sarcastic moniker like that. I don't know. I'm just not the mushy, gushy person that ever needed baby talk. And
yeah, me neither.
Not me at all.
And we saw Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, whatever it's called. And Jay calls everyone Boo Boo Kitty Fuck. Colin did go around for quite some time calling me Boo Boo Kitty Fuck. Every now and again that does come out and I'm like, yeah, why not?
It's better to.
Hey, boo boo! No.
But when you see couples that genuinely do the baby talk and mushy gushy, and it just makes me want to gag.
I have a tendency to call Colin and my son sweetie. Come here, sweetie. What do you want for your tea, sweetie? Who's my sweeties?
I will call people honey or sweetie. But only because I'm really bad at remembering names.
So, I hate honey. I detest it. I absolutely... You know when you go in a shop and the server's like, oh, can I help you there, honey? I'm like, but one, no, and two, stop calling me that. I hate it. I hate honey. And I don't know if you have heard it, like when you were in Britain, hinny. So change the U to an I, hinny. And apparently it's a northeast colloquialism, and I had never heard it until I was like 22.
I was going to say that's very old-fashioned Scotland.
Oh, I'd never heard it until somebody I was working. I started at I must have been 26. Sorry, when I started working at the utilities company I used to work for, and one of the girls always called everybody Hinny, and I was like, "Sorry, what? You all right there, Hinny? Sorry, what?" Do you mean honey? No, hinny. Never heard it. And considering I'm northeast born and bred, I'd never heard that before.
Oh, yeah, I've heard it. I've never heard it used. I've read it in a book.
Oh, it's like one of the other girls used to call, she used to say, oh, me Mara's coming. I'm like, who? What? What's a Mara? Like Marrow born. No, Mara, meaning her brother, and she used to call him kid as well. Our kid's coming. Like, you've got a child? You're only 16? She went, no, my brother. Never heard it.
Yeah. No, that's a very Yorkshire thing, our kid.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that my mother drilled into me to speak properly. And, you know, water has a T, so I wouldn't go water, which is very northeastern. Go water, can I have a glass of water? I say, no, it's water. There is water in this glass, you can have water. I've always been like that. But yeah, never heard them. Like pinnacle tea, hadn't even heard of pinnacle tea or had pinnacle tea until my mother-in-law made it for me when I was like 17 or 18. And that's a very northeastern dish. It involves sausages, corned beef and potato and gravy. Proper gravy, British gravy, not your American gravy.
I've never heard of it.
It's very northeastern. Very northeastern. Pinnacle tea.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's like the chicken parmo that's from Middlesbrough. And it's like chicken with like cheese and other bits and pieces. And it's very Middlesbrough. And somebody made it on MasterChef. And all of a sudden, like, it's across the nation now. Everybody's like, oh, look, it's chicken parmo. And they've made it all posh. It's like, no, you get it from a greasy takeout where they do takeout pizzas and kebabs. You don't get it from a Michelin star restaurant. It's a chicken parmo, for God's sakes.
I guess in Yorkshire, everyone is generically love.
Yeah.
Or duck. Are you all right, duck? Yeah, I'm fine, duck.
Yeah. My nana used to call everybody cocker. You're right, cocker. I was like, nana, stop calling me that. You're right, cocker. You little cock. Nana, please stop saying that.
That's delightful.
Oh, honestly. The first time when I actually realised that it wasn't like a male hen, what that word meant, I was like, Nana, please stop. Please. I don't understand. And she used to go crazy when I used to say bugger. And then she's calling me cocker. Is it really? Stop swearing.
At the library, working with Americans, the occasional love would slip out. Because it's ingrained in me. I mean, I've been calling everyone love for decades. And then it flips out and they're like, what did you say? Like, I'm not making a declaration of love to you. No. It's just a realism. It doesn't mean anything. Don't take it personally.
No, it's just a turn of phrase.
Yeah. You literally say it to the milkman or...
You all right there, love?
Hmm? Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I think America, they say a lot of babe. You okay, babe? On TV and things, I see Americans saying babe a lot. That's not really very British. But then, even knowing say love or honey or sweetie and all them, I wouldn't say it to somebody I didn't know.
No.
I would say it to like friends, I would say it to family, but even then I'm selective over who. Like the only people I call anything other than, you know, their name or mom or brother or whatever is my son and my husband who get Sweeney or Monster.
What was the answer to our question?
We didn't
after
answer
that
it.
40 minute discussion.
We didn't answer it. You want to be a sweetie puff, a sugar pants, or a cuddle pie?
Yeah, I think
it's
sweetie.
I'm gonna go with sugar pants.
Sam.
I just like the pants part.
Yeah. It sounds more sarcastic as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be sugar pants.
Hey, boo-boo sugar pants.
No. No. Stop it.
Okay, sugar pants.
That's how you get ants.
Gross.
Quick, move it up.
Terrible. It's terrible.
How you get blown?
Oh man. Okay, well that was the end of our Would You Rather segment. Thank you so much for joining us and talking to Claire about British things. For a very long time. I think that she really misses it because she only talks to me or American people. So you probably just made her weak at least. You made my week too, but that's just because I like you. Thanks for joining us. Yes. That was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Nina.
Bye. Bye.
And if you give us $10,000, you can hear me and Nina talk about all the Britishness.
You can. I swear to God you were doing it on purpose.
We really weren't. It just was natural British conversation.
No, you will never convince me that you were not just saying random ass British fucking sounding words just to see me like glaze over.
You'd have no idea how much I have a fancy for a finger of fudge right now, which sounds really dirty.
Terrible. That's terrible.
I want a cup of tea and a finger of fudge.
Well, you can go and have that. That'll be fine.
Thanks.
It'll be fine. Oh, that was fun, though. That was fun. Just hearing your joy at speaking to someone else on the podcast.
Somebody who understands me.
I understand you just fine, except for when your you start saying weird names of weird shit. Then Henny. I'm done. Don't say Henny.
Mara.
Don't say Henny. Don't say Mara.
Kid.
Mm-mm.
Why-I.
Mm-mm.
Wah-ah.
Wah-ah. Wah-ah.
Pinnacle tea.
That's not even a word.
Chicken parvo.
Pinnacle tea? Can you spell that? No spelling. It's not a real word. It's not real.
It is. But if you look at the history, it's very, very local. Very local!
It's not real, Mr. Very Bennington. Local. It's not very real. Local. No, it's not real. What are you saying?
Pinnacle tea. No. Pinnacle tea is spelt variously. P-A-N-A-C-A-L-T-Y or P-A-N-A-C-K-E-L.
No.
T-Y.
None of those things are real words. No. No.
It's,
corned it's... beef hot pot. Recipes.
Potatoes.
Recipes from Hairy Bikers.
Oh, the Hairy Bikers are mint. They're an institution. The Hairy Bikers are a British institution. The two local lads. One's from Carlisle, one's from Newcastle. And they have travelled the world. I remember after having Matthew, and we watched the Hairy Bikers travelling around Asia. And so every time I see the Hairy Bikers, I remember the first month of having Matthew.
Do you need to contact the Hairy Bikers and see if they'll join us on the podcast?
So tempting. They're absolutely batshit bonkers. They did the Lost a Load of Weight, so the books they released were called the Hairy Dieters instead. And the jambalaya recipe that I use is theirs.
That's fantastic. Can you send me that recipe so I can make it? I like a good jambalaya.
Adore the Hairy Bikers.
Anyway, that's the end of that segment. Now it's time for other things. You know, we didn't talk about favorite characters, but Aiden is my favorite character. We didn't talk about that at all. I love Aiden.
Yeah. Error.
I was just reading a quote, and there was, she says, because you're loopier than Flacky Mick's psycho mayor of Crazy Town, and he says, my databases show no record of this Crazy Town of which you speak. A brain the size of an entire city burns inside me. My intelligence quotient is beyond the human scale. I would prefer it if you did not refer to me in such a fashion. Aiden.
Well, final thoughts this time. It's time for final thoughts. What is your final thought?
My final thought. This seems to be a common theme at the moment with books and TV shows that I'm currently reading / watching. If there is an artificial intelligence, the chances are good it's going to gain sentience and try and kill you. Sorry.
It's true. We really need to watch out for our fictional hangover sentient Twitter account.
Oh, how do I get notifications for if it tries to abandon its post and turn into like some kind of robotic Pinocchio child thing.
I don't know, but we need to watch out for it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have I have a final thought / life lessons / quote from the book. The universe was here before you, and it will go on after you. The only way it will remember you is if you do something worthy of remembrance.
Oh.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
so
I like
do
that.
Something important. That's that. Get off your ass and do something important.
Now I feel like really lazy.
I'm in lockdown.
Do something. Can't.
Does this count? Does podcasting count?
I think so. I hope so, because it's the only thing that in my life that I do. Besides playing Animal Crossing. And making videos stuff about Animal Crossing. And making live action Animal Crossing videos.
And making t-shirts.
And making t-shirts. And making
Where can I get a t-shirt?
Crops. You can get a t-shirt, my friend, at shop.spreadshirt.com/fictionalhangover. Please, go and buy a t-shirt today.
We really need to write some good ones.
We're never going to. We say it every time, and we're never going to do it.
That's because instead of, like, recording an episode and then, you know, actually going to do something productive afterwards, I just call it Animal Crossing.
Yeah. And that's why Animal Crossing is featured in our commercials for our Spreadshirt shop. It's happening.
I'm trying to change our Goodreads to show that we're actually reading currently Illuminate. But it just keeps being a dick.
We'll have to try it again later. I don't have an accent of the week this time, P.S. Because there was an error in my programming.
Error.
Because I spent too much time making Animal Crossing props to then make a live-action Animal Crossing commercial. And I'm not sad about that. And I don't think that it was a waste of time.
No, I'm jealous of your props. I want a wand and I want a crown. And I will have to make said wands and crowns.
I really like it. I really like my wand and my crown.
My life.
I just like that I have clothes that I wear in Animal Crossing in real life.
I need a spacesuit.
Do you need a spacesuit? We both need spacesuits after having read this book. And The Pioneer. They're very important.
Very.
Spacesuits are very important.
That, you know.
A heart exploding harness?
Yes.
And nanobots and hum healing?
I mean, do you know what? The nanobots are fun. Very useful. But I really want some hum healing.
I would like some hum healing too. I think it's important. That was last week's book, though. That's not this week's book. So let's skip ahead. We've just moved past accent of the week because error. And now we have, if you liked this, try this. I feel like that I want to talk about this time because of my unhealthy obsession with Dawn Kurtigage.
You really need to get help, like medical attention.
I probably do.
It's but a good job she doesn't live near you because stalking would be involved.
It probably would be. But I like to think that we would be friends in real life if that were a thing.
If you didn't have her tied up in your basement.
I don't have her tied up in my basement. It's terrible.
That's what you do. Admit it.
I don't have a basement because I live in an apartment. Anyway.
But if you did, you didn't say no.
If I did, I would keep my favorite authors in the basement. No, I wouldn't. That makes me sound terrible. I really
at least,
wouldn't.
At least they'd have company because you've got more than one in there.
That's true.
They could do Instagram lives.
They could.
And they could have their own little podcast, Authors in the Attic.
They could. They could do that. They could do. Except for they're in the basement, not the attic.
But that that doesn't rhyme. Alliteration.
No. Mm-mm. Okay, so I would keep them in an attic, but I still don't have an attic because I live in an apartment. There's not an attic or a basement. Anyway,
can't keep them in a kitchen cupboard.
No.
That's just not humane.
No, it's not. No. No, none of that is good. So anyway, I already mentioned it once in the episode, way back at the beginning. Way back, like, 8 minutes ago in the beginning of this episode. Reading Illuminae really made me remember reading The Dead House, and I think that if you like these epistolary-style novels that you, and you really enjoyed reading Illuminae, that you should also go and read The Dead House. And we talked about The Dead House way back in episode 4 of the Baby podcast. And we had Dawn Kurtigage on, but not in real life because things did not line up. But she still answered the Would You Rather questions and sent her responses in. And I edited them together and it was really awkward. And then we tried to have her on to talk about Teeth in the Mist, which is another epistolary novel. And that episode was cursed. But anyway, you should read The Dead House because it is still to this day the only book that has ever scared me. And I am all the time searching for more. So anyway, In the Dead House by Dawn Kurtigage. The summary taken from Goodreads. 25 years ago, Elmbridge High burned down. 3 people were killed and 1 pupil, Carly Johnson, disappeared. Now a diary has been found in the ruins of the school. The diary belongs to Caitlin Johnson, Carly's identical twin sister. But Carly didn't have a twin.
What?
Reopened police records, psychiatric reports, transcripts of video footage, and fragments of diary reveal a web of deceit and intrigue, violence and murder, raising a whole lot more questions than it answers. Who was Caitlin, and why did she only appear at night? Did she really exist, or was she a figment of a disturbed mind? What were the illicit rituals taking place at the school, and just what did happen at Elmbridge in the events leading up to the Johnson incident? So good. Such a good book. Still to this day, the only book that actually ever scared me. Applause go to Dawn Kurtigage.
Which I mentioned the other day, I was chatting to someone in a book club thread, and they wanted scary books, and I said this is the only book that has made my friend scared, so check out Dawn Kurtigage books.
Yeah, Dawn Kurtigage is really great. Anyway, the end.
They're just not allowed to talk about it.
No, the end. Stop talking about that. Abort. Error. Alarm sounds going off.
Can anybody else hear that klaxon? No, it's a nuclear warhead.
Oh no! Oh yikes! Oh, it's terrible. All right. So that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire. I don't know what's going on.
I don't either. Join us next time as we discuss My Calamity Jane by Cynthia Hand, Brody Ashton, and Jodie Meadows, narrated by Sophie Amos. Contact us if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment or if you have any books to recommend. Also, be sure to look out for the next Would You Rather poll on social media. And don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. And also our shop at shop.spreadshirt.com/fictionalhangover. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
Yeah.
Error.
Oh dear me. You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. And now on Goodreads at www.goodreads.com/fictionalhangover. And finally, a special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and on Patreon. Thanks for listening.
All right, the end.